welcome to the Provider Wellbeing and Self-Care series. I'm getting ahead of myself in my mind. This is our first session for our Provider Wellbeing and Self-Care series. We'll be talking about creating a wellness plan in uncertain times today. There are several other wonderful presentations coming up that I hope you were able to take note of during the welcome slideshow. We have upcoming another similar topic on radical acceptance, which we'll touch on a tiny bit today. Mindfulness-based stress regulation, which is another one that I'll be facilitating in July, and on practicing self-compassion. So if you're in need of additional support with self-care, like many of us are, feel free to join those other one-hour sessions as well. But for today, we're going to be talking about how to take care of ourselves and do this with intentionality, with some planning, with some hopefully increased insight about how to take best care of ourselves in uncertain times. This presentation was developed in 2020 during the beginning of the pandemic. It was the first training we hosted online at the Public Mental Health Partnership. And if you've been on our Learning Center, you may have noticed that we have so many now. It's amazing to think how much has changed in 3 years. We thought about shifting the title. However, things are still uncertain. It's not the beginning of the pandemic, but it's 3 years into COVID-19, perhaps still being on our minds, other things being on our minds like climate change, politics, terrible tragedies, mass shooting, racial injustice. So it still feels uncertain to a lot of us. And working in LA County, in the helping profession, supporting folks where there are so many barriers to being able to provide the best support, housing comes to mind, having enough resources for our clients to find some successes and improvements in their qualities of life, can be really challenging and bring up a lot of uncertainty. So we thought the topic was still super relevant, and hopefully this can be helpful in encouraging you to take more time and care with yourself, so that not only are you able to be there for your clients, but also just have a richer life, both in your work life and your home life. So a lot of this will be reminders that you already know, given what you do, but I'm hoping it'll be nice to turn the lens towards yourself instead of towards the other people that you put so much energy into. To get us in this space, since it's the middle of the day, at the end, approaching the end of the work week, I wanted to do a brief meditation. I want to give a caveat to the fact that meditation has a bunch of evidence that supports it helping folks with well-being in general. I think we've realized that in our field. And it's also something that doesn't work for everyone. People who might be neurodivergent, who might have different experiences of trauma, might have different things going on, it can feel really inaccessible. So if for you, meditation just isn't what's landing right, feel free to look at something else, do something else with the next couple minutes. But if you would like, and if you feel that it would benefit you, please join me. I'm going to turn off my camera and you can keep yours on or not. It helps me feel a little bit less self-conscious to turn it off. So I'll be turning that off and I'll just be playing a meditation. There is a link to the audio in our slides, which I will also share in the chat box soon. So with all that, I'm going to go ahead and start the meditation, and it's about 3.5 minutes.
Arriving into the present moment. No yesterday, no tomorrow, no today. just right now in this present moment. Taking a moment to notice your body and its sensations, the beating of your heart, the rising and falling of your stomach. Arriving right here, right now, in this present moment. Placing our attention on the breath. On the inhale, noticing the way the cool air rushes in through our nostrils, down our throats, and into our lungs. And on the exhale, following the breath as it leaves. With every in-breath, we welcome stillness, and every out-breath, releasing tension. Taking three breaths together, slowly and deeply inhaling, and taking your time on the exhale, letting it all go. Noticing what it's like to notice, what it feels like to be here in this moment. Maybe resistance comes, the mind wanders, the internal chatter gets louder. Returning to the breath, slowly and deeply inhaling, and taking your time on the exhale, letting it all go. No judgment, no shame, just right now. There's no place you need to be, only here in this present moment. Breathing in, I am here. Breathing out, I am present. Returning back to the room, we become present to our bodies and our breath, becoming present to sounds and sensations, inviting movement back into our limbs, noticing the fingers and the feet, taking a little stretch, and when you're ready, opening your eyes.
All right. Well, having a meditation at the beginning of a training is so helpful, I think, for everyone joining. I appreciate when folks do it, but also helpful for leading a training. I feel much more grounded in the moment. And wondering if anyone else noticed any shift during the meditation, feel free to put it in the chat. And we're going to take kind of an interesting turn and talk about learning objectives, which is not as mindful, but it is what we're trying to do today. So what are we doing here today? All right, so our goals for today are to discuss some key concepts, including uncertainty, rumination, and self-care. We're going to look at a way to rate how much stress or distress we're experiencing to kind of keep track. You know, in the description, it says measuring your own emotions as well as service recipients' emotions. But really, we're focusing on you today. We're focusing on ourselves. But these things are transferable to our clients, which is pretty handy. And when we model some of this stuff, it can be super helpful for clients. So it's all good for everybody. We're also going to review the importance of self-care. You know, a lot of that are reminders, because I'm sure you're aware. And then we'll talk about developing a comprehensive self-care plan. And we have some materials for you. Right. So I'd love to kind of, we're getting into the moment, we're getting into the present, and I'm wondering what kinds of emotions are you experiencing right now? And so I set up a poll for us to take just to get a sense from the room. This is anonymous. We won't know who picked what, but it can be kind of nice. And so we'll have two polls that are a little bit different from each other. Identify which of the following emotions are you experiencing right now? And these are going to be more on the unpleasant side. So I'm, we all have a mix all the time. And so we'll have another poll in a moment. But for now, I do any do you res do any of these emotions resonate with how you're doing right now? So we can see that many of us are feeling tired today. One of us is feeling angry. There's a lot in the world to be angry about, not to mention little things that could cause some anger. We've got folks feeling anxious and detached. Not so much sadness and confusion today. But, I can definitely identify with many of these. I'm feeling a little bit anxious because I always do when I do a training. And I'm also feeling a bit tired. Seems to be a thing that happens a lot. So let's talk a little bit about these emotions. So here's a list of emotions that might come up for you. Certainly in kind of big disaster event times, like at the beginning of the pandemic, but also throughout our time in our lives, working, reading the news, watching the media, being on social media in particular, interpersonally in our relationships, in our personal lives, at work. We might feel a range of things: sad, tired, confused, angry, anxious, detached, lonely, frustrated, scared, and overwhelmed. Actually, from the polls, I didn't scroll down far enough, and I see that some folks are feeling overwhelmed. It was kind of second after tired. And that's something we hear all the time in this work. There's too many things to do, not enough time and resources. So it makes sense. So I would love if we could engage in another poll to maybe see if we have a balance of emotions today. So when you have a chance, please let us know which of the following emotions are you experiencing right now. And there's only a few options for this one. They're more on the positive end. We've got 20% feeling happiness, some relief going on for a couple of you. Folks are feeling content, which is just, a nice place to be, loving, 4 out of 15, and optimistic, 9 out of 15. So thanks so much for participating in both of those polls. I hope to not have any more windows jump into my screen. I bring up both the positive and, or I should say, pleasant and unpleasant emotions just to point out the fact that on one hand, it can be easier when we're in times of stress, when we're in times of uncertainty to identify with the negative emotions. And just like you just showed, we can experience multiple things at the same time. We can experience, anger about a certain situation, but feel loving because we looked at our dog or something. We can feel anxious about an upcoming interaction you're going to have, but also optimistic that it might go well. One of the things I always say is that excitement and anxiety are kind of the same, like different sides of the same emotion. And so whenever I'm feeling excited, I also feel anxious because there's, something out of my control. I want something to go well, and there's a little bit of pressure that makes me feel a little bit anxious. So just trying to normalize that it's totally normal to feel a range of emotions. Particularly after experiencing a world-altering pandemic, we are We're at a time where, you know, things for some folks feel that they have gone back to normal, and yet we might still have some lingering struggles due to the pandemic, due to climate change, due to racial injustice, mass shootings, anti-LGBT rhetoric. There's so much out there that can impact us. So I just want to normalize us feeling different ways about the same thing or different ways about different things in the same moment. It's important, you know, to give ourselves permission to feel how we are feeling in any given moment, whether those are positive feelings, negative feelings, pleasant or unpleasant or mixed. We work on this a lot with our clients. If you are a helper and you work out in the community, we want our clients to feel validated in their emotions. And we also can validate our own feelings. It makes sense to feel nervous about something that is important to you. It makes sense to feel overwhelmed given the system barriers to providing the best care for our clients. Given the workforce shortage, where you might have more cases than you did in the past before the pandemic, for instance, you know, given just the lack of housing and how that can be such a barrier to other progress that you're hoping your clients can make. So we want to just give ourselves permission to feel how we're feeling, just like we give our clients permission. So my former colleague David created this certificate of permission. It's a little corny, but you know, sometimes corny can work. So if you feel like this resonates for you, you could print out this page, put your name in there, and you could say the above named individual is hereby officially granted permission to feel however you're feeling. And you know, this can be just like a kind of silly way to remind yourself that it's okay. Things are very challenging. All right. So the topic for today is, you know, creating a wellness plan in uncertain times. And you can see why it was originally developed right at the beginning of the pandemic. There was so much uncertainty that we were all experiencing back then, not knowing the extent of the dangers of COVID-19, unsure how our jobs and social lives would shift and change, how long that would last for, and just general worry about our own well-being, our own health, that of our clients and our loved ones. But 3 years later, there's still a lot out there to make us feel uncertain. And many of us are paying a price for the hypervigilance, isolation, and continual stress that greatly impacted all of our lives at once. There's repercussions for that for some folks. And so just want to normalize that we're in a new normal, but we're all still adjusting. And when we're feeling uncertainty, we can see this definition here. Uncertainty is the lack of certainty, of course, a state of having limited knowledge where it is impossible to exactly describe existing state or future outcome more than one possible outcome. So, you know, uncertainty is about not knowing, and there's many things we don't have control over. And when we're feeling uncertain, this feeling of control over our lives, having that lack of control can just add stress. So just want to acknowledge that, and that uncertainty is really challenging. There's evidence that shows that uncertainty contributes to times of stress in our lives. So uncertainty can result in feelings of sadness or anxiety. That makes sense based on my own experience, maybe for you as well. It can also impact how we feel about ourselves, our self-esteem. It can impact the way we think about what's going on and what is stressful. We can start to ruminate, which we'll get into in a moment. And we can also feel unable to detach from the stressful situation. I think of instances where I had clients who were going through something and I couldn't stop thinking about it after I went home. You've probably had that before where you're very worried and you just can't stop and detach from that situation in order to gain perspective because there's so much emotion there. When things are uncertain and times are stressful, these are normal reactions to have our self-esteem impacted, to start thinking in a way that might not be super productive, and just to get through the time. So we want to normalize that and also acknowledge that there are things we can do to help us ourselves. So we'll talk a little bit more about what rumination is and what we can do. So rumination goes hand in hand with uncertainty. It's the act of thinking about a problem or situation repeatedly without any resolution. I think of it as like, I don't know, a hornet's nest of thoughts, a never-ending cycle. You're kind of just hooked into trying to figure something out that is not figure outable in that moment. So we have this emoji guy here, you know, kind of thinking, and he's ruminating about like finances, and he's also thinking about all his clients on his caseload, and he's having a hard time not thinking about those things. He doesn't have an immediate solution and it's kind of impacting him. And this makes sense really, because we might think that if we pay attention to the problem or the uncertainty and think about it enough, we can find a way out. We can find the right solution. You know, if worry solved problems, I would have no problems because I have spent plenty of time worrying a lot about different things. And unfortunately, worry produces more worry without action and taking steps. And so we want to understand that this can occur and is normal and makes sense because we're trying to solve this problem that we might have. And at the same time, at a certain point, it's no longer helpful for us to keep going in the directions we want to and engage in the activities and relationships and all that we need to feel good and be able to show up in our personal lives and in our work lives. Rumination can lead to increased anxiety, impacted self-esteem, and of course, contribute to depression, very similar to uncertainty. And that's, you know, it makes sense because they're pretty tied. One thing we can do is start to notice when this is happening. You know, even going back to our meditation earlier, she said, you know, notice that you're noticing at some point. You know, so one way that we can interrupt when our thoughts are kind of taking over is to identify that that's going on, acknowledging that that's going on. What this can look like is we're ruminating, we're thinking over and over about issues, problems, challenges, struggles, having to do with work or personal life. And we just get swept up. We're just caught in there. It's like we're inside our minds and not in our bodies in the world. So being able to note when that's happening can put a little distance between that ruminating mind and the part of us that notices the rumination is happening. And this helps us create a little space between our thoughts and our consciousness. And once we're able to notice that this is happening, that our thoughts keep swirling about the problem without finding a solution or resolution, we can more easily intervene and decide to put that thought aside and focus on other things that are within control in our lives. If we don't notice we're ruminating, it's just kind of on autopilot happening, we can't do anything about it, right? So noticing helps us kind of get into the moment and see what's going on and make different decisions. And what this looks like is kind of breaking that downward spiral that anxiety and stress can bring up. It can be easy to get stuck in rumination when external factors in our lives support it. This happened to me early in the pandemic, and it still impacts me today. And I'll just use a little example. So the example I think of is when the pandemic started, I was working in the field in San Francisco doing outreach, and I was just all of a sudden glued to my news app on my phone. I think I had like the local newspaper, and then I just used like the general news app. I just wanted to know what was going on with COVID, how many people had it in that area, what were the newest guidelines for PPE and social distancing, vaccine stuff, the mask debate, all this stuff. I would just felt like I don't have control over this new situation. And so I'm going to try to gain control by looking at the news constantly. This was because I was really terrified of this was at the beginning. So unknowingly, putting my clients at risk, I went to a lot of supportive housing sites. And so I felt nervous going from site to site, wondering if I was a vector for COVID. And it was this really just, boosted my desire to be online, knowing what's going on all the time. But it never really felt like I ever knew what exactly was going on. The news articles just gave me more questions and worries, and my rumination grew from there. And I've noticed these days I'm still a little bit hooked on my news app because uncertainty hasn't gone away for me. And I do try to use it as a form of controlling what I can't control. And so I can notice that it increases my stress. And so there's some things that I'm trying to do differently to interrupt that rumination. And that is noticing when it's going on, talking with others about that. It's also me being more intentional with how long I will spend looking at the news per day, what times of day. Am I going to look at the news right before I'm doing a training? No, it's not going to put me in a great headspace, but maybe I can look at it, at the end of the day, or I can kind of make some adjustments. But the first step was really noticing that something was going on. So bringing mindfulness back into that particular habit of mine has been really helpful in not, falling into that rumination trap. So what we want to do when this downward spiral is happening is we want to figure out the best way to get ourselves back to the present moment. Because we know the more we think about something does not mean that you're more likely to solve the problem. For the vast majority. Perhaps mathematicians might look at this differently, they think, and then they come up with the answer, maybe. I don't know how that works. But for most of our problems that we end up kind of thinking ourselves silly about, the thinking isn't what changes anything with the problem. It's what we do. So we can do things like I was saying, limit the amount of, like, if you have an issue with your phone, a lot of us have like screen, we're really into the screen time. We might want to limit how long we're, for me, on the news app or on social media, or we also might just, if you have a general worry and you want to stop ruminating, you can also invite yourself, okay, I want to think about this with intention. So I'm going to set aside time later to worry about it, like setting yourself up to have like 5 or 10 minutes to worry and journal about that or think about it or talk about it. You know, people could talk out loud into their recording device on their phone, some whatever helps you have more intention when and more mindfulness when we're engaging in these behaviors. Some other ideas that can help with breaking that downward spiral could be to engage in activities that interrupt your ability to ruminate. So I can't ruminate about something I'm worried about if my favorite song is playing, right? So music might be a way that you can get out. You can think of all your other senses that you use that can kind of get you out of that mode. Other ideas might be going for a walk or stretching, phoning a friend, calling a friend to talk about whatever, maybe the issue, but maybe something else. You can incorporate different senses. You know, some people use aromatherapy to get into a different headspace. I would love to hear from you. What do you do when you're in this kind of downward spiral, worrying or ruminating, feeling increasingly distressed about something? How do you get back to the present moment, back to where you're at? And where you want to go? What are the things that you do? I see someone says, I journal, always picks me up. Yeah, journaling can be super powerful for a lot of folks. There's some journaling apps I'll show later on. Doesn't work for everyone, but if it works for you, that's great. We have another one. I ask, what do I need? Have I eaten? Do I need to hydrate? Do I need sunlight? I just want to write down all of those questions and put them on a post-it on my desk. That's beautiful. We're taking care of our physical body. Like, am I nourished? Am I hydrated? What do I need? Have I gotten fresh air and sunlight? So important, especially with the gloomy weather that has been happening lately. Call a loved one or do a grounding exercise. I think grounding exercises can be really great, especially if you're someone like I mentioned earlier in the training who hasn't found meditation super helpful. Grounding can be a different approach. Or somatic exercises as well, like tapping. I just learned about that from doing our other ongoing self-care group we have that I'll mention towards the end. Another person said, you listen to music and talk to someone. I like to paint. I hang out with my dog and cat. So me too, animals, if you're a pet person, animals can be so helpful to get you out of your own mind, right? When you're just there in the moment with your dog or cat, your cat might be purring, your dog's wagging their tail, giving you that beautiful eye contact that makes you feel loved. Painting, engaging in crafts, engaging in creating art, even if it's just for you or just for the moment and you get rid of it, but expressing your creativity just taps into a different part of our brain. So these are excellent suggestions. Thank you so much. So when we think more about rumination, it makes sense that it's the opposite of mindfulness, right? We're not in the present moment. We are worried about the past. We're worried about the future. We're not able to kind of be where we are in the moment. And Silverstein and Colts said that rumination, this kind of restrictive thinking, can exacerbate negative thoughts and emotions and pull an individual out of the reality of the present moment, submerging him or her in perseverative thought patterns involving the past, fantasy, or the future. So, you know, if you have experienced rumination, you've experienced this kind of pull. You're pulled out of reality. You know, I think of just like a personal anecdote from this past weekend. I had friends visiting, and one of the friends, I made a sarcastic comment, and one of my friends didn't appreciate it. And then I could not stop thinking about it. We had already worked it out. Everything was fine in the relationship. However, I couldn't get out of my mind for a moment, and I had to figure out how to do that to be more present. I know that's just a tiny little example, but it comes to mind because this stuff happens for some of us quite frequently. Another way that we can check in with ourselves, I have a little bit of resistance to this because scales really, I just am, I think I have vicarious overwhelm of scales from working with clients and having them just have to, you know, rate their emotions or their pain all the time. And at the same time, it can be helpful. So I want to let you know about this method that comes from cognitive behavioral therapy on checking in, kind of in a, you know, using the scale to see how you're doing. You would basically rate it like if you're at a one, you have zero distress, everything's hunky-dory, perfect, wonderful, it's the best. And at a 10, you'd be at the worst, right? You're incredibly distressed. You've never felt this distress before. It's completely debilitating, overwhelming. So what you can do is rate your overall level of distress. It can include any of the emotions that are unpleasant or troublesome, like the ones at the beginning of the presentation, like fear, sadness, loneliness, overwhelm, feeling detached, feeling stressed, anxious. And you can check in with yourself. How am I feeling right now on a 1 to 10? How am I? And then you can check back in with yourself later. You could also use this before and after an activity that you're testing out to see if it helps you. How was I feeling before and after? I've noticed in doing, I co-facilitate Recess Wednesdays, which is a half hour self-care break every other week. And I notice that usually I feel different before and after the self-care activity we do. I don't necessarily rate it using the subjective units of distress or SUDS, but I can, you know, that might be helpful actually just to figure out how impactful that was for me. All right, so let's go into self-care, which, you know, in the past 3 years has been a huge topic for many of us. Self-care, we got to self-care. I see a comment. I feel sometimes like I'm a functioning distressed person. I relate to that. I have been there. Yes. You're showing up to work, you're paying your bills, you're doing what needs to be done, and yet you still have this feeling of distress that's running through all of it, which, you know, I think just shows, anyone who experiences that, we should give ourselves credit for being able to function despite all these emotions. And your emotions are valid. And there are ways that we can engage in self-care to hopefully reduce that feeling of distress and increase our feeling of self-efficacy, our ability to do things, and hopefully increase some of those more pleasant emotions. So we've talked so far about some of the emotions we might be feeling. We've talked about uncertainty specifically and rumination, how that uncertainty can look in our minds. And then we've looked at this way to measure subjectively for our own self as we go throughout our day. But what do we do once we have awareness of all of this stuff? What do we do with those feelings and those internal experiences so that we can be on track with our lives and be engaged in what's meaningful to us? Well, you know, the answer is not shocking, but really getting engaged in taking care of ourselves can increase our feelings of self-efficacy, our ability to do things that help break out of rumination and take space from We can also take bigger space from uncertainty and engage in the things that really make life worth living. Self-care can be defined here as an awareness of needs and limits, you know, that basic boundary stuff, balance in work and play, and connection to self and others. If you like acronyms, ABCs of self-care is awareness, balance, and connection. So if that's a little shortcut for you, I hope it is. So how do we do this? How do we do this self-care? Sometimes self-care can be seen as like this extra thing we're doing, this special thing we're doing, this thing we're doing because we deserve it, because we've been working hard. It's like a treat on the side. But when I'm talking about self-care today, I'm not talking about it like that. I'm talking about self-care as something that is ongoing, that we should can do for ourselves all the time and isn't something that is extra. It's just part of taking care of our lives and taking care of our whole selves. So this model that we're going to talk about right now was created by Patricia Burke in 2006. And so we want to create a self-care plan that has a couple of different things. We want it to be accessible, so stuff that we can do and feel like easy enough to do. We want it to be acceptable, and we want it to be appropriate to our unique circumstances. So we're getting really individual with ourselves here. And like I said, it's not about treating yourself. It's personal and professional responsibility that enables you to continue to work to help others. And I would add to that, helps you continue to feel connected, to feel in your purpose, to feel like you're getting some moments of joy in your life. Self-care can also be seen from the lens of an ethical responsibility. So in that link that I shared earlier, there we have some more information about self-care as an ethical responsibility as proposed by the Green Cross Academy of Traumatology. They developed this standards of self-care guidelines. It's a really interesting document. I encourage you to check it out. But they propose that it's unethical not to attend to your self-care as a practitioner. And I'm not, you know, this is not to say that if you are struggling with your self-care that you are unethical. But instead, it's just to give more, more attention to the fact that when we're able to take better care of ourselves, we're able to show up better for our clients. And so if we notice that we're not taking care of ourselves, eventually that might bleed into the work that we're doing, which can show up like burnout vicarious or secondary trauma. This does not mean that if we're not taking the best care of ourselves and we are impacted by these things, it is our fault, but it is meant to give us some agency in choosing and intentionally deciding to engage in self-care for ourselves. Just more support for doing this for ourselves. So there's the responsibility of self-care. Ultimately, it's your responsibility to take care of yourself, and no situation nor person can justify neglecting it. We could talk at length about what that might mean, like eating lunch during your workday is one thing I think of that comes to mind. Seek, find, and remember appreciation from supervisors and clients. These and other activities increase worker satisfaction, which sustains helpers emotionally and spiritually in their helping. You can put a little folder in your Outlook that has, or whatever email you use that has like kudos, and you can put any email you ever got that, you know, was complimenting how you're doing in your role. I've done that before. It really helped because it's often like those pleasant and unpleasant emotions. It can be easier to access the more negative things going on at work than the positive. So being able to notice those and take note of them can help us keep going. And then making a formal, tangible commitment, written, public, specific, and measurable promises to self-care. So we want to be committed to it, to self-care, both for ourselves and for our work. And so one way to do that is to, you know, use paper and pen or your computer and a PDF to really take some time to consider what different aspects of your life could use some additional care. This is created by Patricia Burke, who was referenced previously. It requires this professional and personal commitment. And you can share this with others. If you are on a team and this feels appropriate, you could work on this together and share your responses and share other ideas. I always get amazing ideas from our Recess Wednesday group because everyone is unique. And so, you know, I'm pretty creative, but I also know that so many of us are. So I want to hear what other people have come up with. This has been super helpful in case management in general, right? There's so many different experiences people have that give them more expertise. So why not find out from them how they were able to get that SSI appointment or how they were able to, you know, negotiate this eviction prevention plan or something. So in that link that I shared in the chat, you can access this comprehensive self-care plan. And for the next few minutes, I'm just going to review some examples of what you might put on there. So it's divided into four sections, as you can see on this slide. We've got physical, psychological, and mental is one. The third is emotional, relational, and the fourth is spiritual. So we'll go through a couple of examples to kind of jumpstart you on thinking about what you might put. So for physical, it's divided into personal and workplace. So what can I do physically that helps me feel less distressed, helps me feel more regulated? One thing could be, I want to move more. So I'm gonna, when I take my dog out, you know, maybe I only walk him like half a block, usually for like a quick bathroom break, but instead I'm gonna walk him an extra block, just add in a little bit of extra outdoor time with my dog, getting that fresh air, whatever. You might also decide, I'll drink a glass of water in the morning before my first cup of coffee, kind of attuning to these physical needs we have. Like, how many times have I just drank like 3 cups of coffee before having any water? Too many times. So maybe if I start with water, that can set me up. Another one for the personal life, I'm going to take a hot shower about 1 to 2 hours before bedtime to help me sleep. If you have any experience with sleep hygiene, this can be really helpful because it signals to your body that it's time to cool down after a hot shower, similarly to when we go to sleep. So it could set us ourselves up for that. In the workplace, if you're working from home, you might want to get up from your desk at least once an hour to wash your hands, talk to your roommates or family or your pets, and really get back in the present moment. If you're doing outreach, you might bring things with you that help you feel physically comfortable. I know for me, this was really helpful in making it easier on me physically. So having multiple layers, because I am never a comfortable temperature, and wearing comfortable sneakers because I was in San Francisco and we walked everywhere, having hand sanitizer or a fan if you overheat easily or it's very hot, having water with you, having a mask if that makes you feel more comfortable, just kind of, you know, physical things that help you feel physically comfortable. And then I mentioned earlier, this, like, I'll take a lunch break every day to make sure that I'm nourished, to make sure that I'm not just working and taking a break and fueling my body for continued work during the rest of the day. I'm going to breeze through these, but we've got psychological or mental. You might want to have more of a regular routine in your life. You might want to focus on your hobbies, like someone mentioned, doing some painting. You might want to tell yourself, I'm gonna like be okay with my emotions as they come up, but I'm also gonna check in with folks that I trust. Maybe folks with experience that relates to mine, like my colleague or supervisor. I might protect my time and energy by using vacation time, taking my lunch break, having solid boundaries with my clients. For emotional and relational goals or things to do for the self-care plan, we might at work check in with our colleagues about how they're doing. This is really hard work. It is really nice to have someone ask about it. I'm going to reach out for support from whomever when I have challenges arise. I'm going to spend 5 minutes every morning before I start my day to journal for a little bit. Personally, I might use that subjective units of distress scale. I might make a list of things I'm grateful for. I might listen to music that reminds me of times when things were going well. And then finally, we've got spiritual. I'll practice some sort of spiritual practice, you know, breathing exercises, meditation, prayer. I will help someone in need in my personal life who could use some extra support that helps me feel spiritually grounded. I will attend blank, you know, church, temple, meditation class, yoga to increase my connection to my spirituality. And then additional ideas, guided imagery. I'll offer support to my colleagues. I'll practice mindful acceptance of work-related frustrations. So that gives just a little idea on how to, you could use that comprehensive self-care plan to make a plan for yourselves going forward. Here are some apps that work for journaling on the go. I've used Penzu out of these forever. I used to use it when it was not an app. It was just online. But there are lots of ways you could also, you know, do pen to paper, whatever feels good for you. So that ends my presentation for today. Here's my email address. I welcome any questions. All right. So this concludes our training. I don't consider it a training, a review today on how to work on our own self-care plan and think about it in a number of ways. And I appreciate your engagement, your attention, and you taking the time for yourself today to be here. And I hope it was a nice break. And look forward to seeing you at future trainings. Thanks so much.